Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Monday, August 23rd meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present. For a moment of silence tonight, I would appreciate if you direct your thoughts towards Jane Ford, who passed away last week. She moved here in 1948 at age 14 and has lived here off and on the whole rest of the time. She was very supportive of our police and fire departments, and we're going to miss her. So if you could direct your thoughts and prayers to her family, I'd appreciate it. We'll have a moment of silence. Thank you. I have some really special things happening this evening. We're going to have, for our pledge, we're going to bring up Chief Olivas and about to be sworn in Commander Brian Millard to lead us in the pledge.
Good evening. I'm waiting to do this, but I'm going to delegate this to Commander Brian Millard.
Would everyone please stand and join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may stand, please.
We're going to get back up.
You may stand for the color guard.
Whoops. There we go. Chief Olivas, I believe you have a few things to say before the official swearing in.
Yes, I do. Thank you very much, Honorable Mayor Peters. It is, and even though it is an outline of the testing process, the preparation for a position like this is actually a lifetime achievement. It starts way before you even get into the law enforcement profession. As part of that equation, I also want to recognize the wonderful support Commander Millard has from his family, who are all here tonight, especially his wife Monica and his daughter Ariana. And without their support, this wouldn't be possible. And as anyone would know in the law enforcement profession, you can't really, the job, the shift work, the long hours, the getting called in, like I did the first night he was working, you know, the stress, the emergency responses, take a toll on the families as much as the officer or dispatchers that are called out and have to deal with those situations. So the family is oftentimes unrecognized, but a vital part of law enforcement. So at this time, if I could have the Honorable Mayor Janice Peters come down, and we'll be swearing in officially Commander Brian Millard, and then followed by his family, who will be doing the badge pinning.
Okay, please raise your right hand.
Yes.
And repeat after me. I, state your name.
I, Brian Millard.
Do solemnly swear that I will support and defend.
Do solemnly swear that I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
The Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully.
And that I will well and faithfully.
Discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
That I will discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
Congratulations. Thank you.
Judy.
Thank you.
The chief should know better than to hand me a microphone, but I will make this brief, as I know we have a lot of other business. Honorable Mayor, council members, my police family, friends, and my family. Just 10 short years ago, I drove to Morro Bay looking for a job. All I knew about the city was that it was next to the ocean and there was an opening for a police officer. What I did not foresee at that time was that I would find not only a job, but a place to call home. It has been my honor to serve this community for every year since that first day, and I have never regretted the decision to work here, nor have I forgotten the people in my life that have made this all possible. No one achieves success without standing on the shoulders of a great many others. My list is too long to stay completely, but I would like to say a few words of thanks to a brief few. First, to my boss and friend, Tim Olivas, you have taken a leap of faith in me, and I am indebted to you for the opportunities. I look forward to the years and the challenges ahead, and I am grateful that you never tire of questions. I will have quite a few. To the men and women, employees and volunteers, and the friends and family of the Morro Bay Police Department, you inspire me. Working side by side with each of you is a profoundly rewarding experience. Thank you for your tireless dedication to duty, willingness to give of yourselves, and for still taking my calls at all hours looking for someone to work. To my family and close friends, there are no words. And I'm going to have a trouble getting through this one, I can tell. A man would count himself lucky to have one good woman in his life, and yet I have three great ones. To my mom, thank you for providing me with the wisdom to make the right choices, at least a little more frequently than the wrong ones. To my wife, for the strength to face each day and strive to be better on the next. And to my daughter, for giving me hope for our future.
Thank you. And I have asked if our police and fire personnel would stay for a couple of minutes and just hear the next presentation. David Mullinax from the League of California Cities is going to talk about Proposition 22, which is coming up on the ballot and is important to all of us. So I'm glad you're here to hear him.
It's a pleasure to be here, Your Honorable Mayor and Council members. I did want to talk a little bit about Prop 22. It's one of the 10 initiatives on the ballot this November. And it will be the one initiative that will have the most impact on local communities around the state. It will have the most significant impact on all of our communities this November. Once again, I'll take one quick step back. Once again, the state budget is late. And this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody because this is the 17th out of the last 18 years they have been late. And we're going on 2 months late right now to adopt the budget for the state. And I just came back from Sacramento a week ago, and consultants and lobbyists and staff members have told me, Dave, we might not have a budget till the next governor takes office. I mean, Sacramento has been dysfunctional over the years. It continues to be so, and there really is no light at the end of the tunnel with having them getting help from them in order and trying to get them to do their jobs. And their main job is to adopt a budget. And once again, we're in a mess. We have a $19 billion deficit. Either both sides have completely staked out their positions, and there really is not a lot of movement up there. The things they have agreed upon is, once again, raiding other funds, delaying payments to schools and counties, raiding city monies like our HUDA funds, redevelopment funds, property taxes, and playing shell games and political games, quite frankly. Now, how that impacts us here locally is, once again, when the state gets their budget in a mess, they reach down into our pockets, into our local communities, and raid the revenues that are supposed to provide services for our communities. And when they raid revenues to our cities and our communities, there are less police officers on the streets, there are less firefighters in our communities, there are less streets being paved, there are fewer parks, and our quality of life diminishes year after year because, again, their answer has always been to raid local revenues. We have the ability this year to end this kind of silliness once and for all because Prop 22 puts a complete firewall between Sacramento and the dysfunctional attitude and dysfunctional behavior of Sacramento, puts a complete firewall between that and local revenues. From now on, they will know if once Prop 22 passes in November, they will no longer be able to braid, steal, borrow, divert monies that are generated here locally, that are supposed to stay here locally, have historically stayed here locally to provide local services. They will no longer be diverted up to Sacramento to a black hole never to be seen again. And what it does, it protects local communities and the resources in order to provide the type of quality of lifestyle that your citizens in your communities expect. So Prop 22 does not impact the state budget in any way. All it says is they can no longer steal our money. It does not impact educational appropriations. It does not impact anything up there at the state. It merely states you guys up there can no longer balance your budget on our backs. And what we're going to be doing over the next few months is getting out into our communities, educating everybody out there in our communities what Prop 22 does and does not do, how it impacts our communities, and why this is the first step in order to protect our lifestyle at the local level and force Sacramento to have to make tough decisions and balance their own budgets in a similar way that you are forced to balance your budget each and every year. Right now, the polling is very strong because, quite frankly, all the polling shows that Californians have a 12% approval rating of the legislature right now and an 80% disapproval. Californians trust local governments because, quite frankly, you are accountable. They run in, people in your community run into you at supermarkets. They know where you live. They can access you here at City Hall. People trust you to be stewards of their tax money. They do not trust far away, unaccountable, inaccessible government of Sacramento. And quite frankly, this is the last week of session up there right now. And whenever I go up there for that last week, it is literally like walking through the looking glass up there. It's complete unreality up there in Sacramento. The legislators forget where they come from, and they forget what they're supposed to be doing up there, and they play games with special interests. And quite frankly, the only thing they're interested in is special interest and their own reelection. So we have a chance, again, all across California to send a strong message and say enough is enough. We'll handle our business. We'll keep the resources that we generate here locally to provide the kind of quality of life.
Okay, and if you could move out to the lobby, I'd appreciate it so we can get on with our meeting. Okay, and next presentation is going to be Stuart McElhaney, who's going to give us an update on what's happening with the Chamber of Commerce. We're having some changes there, and he is going to let us know what's going on.
Good evening. I'm Stuart McElhaney. I'm president of the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. A couple of weeks ago, Pete Candela walked into my office and said, "I've decided that it's time for me to resign from the Chamber of Commerce."
And hang on, just a second. We're going to shut that door.
Okay.
Okay, I think we can hear now.
I wasn't expecting that. And so the last two or three weeks have been spent with the board of the Chamber of Commerce trying to figure out exactly what we should do and how we should approach the prospect of hiring a new CEO. We've had several meetings of the chamber of the board to discuss goals for the chamber, and we've had and to discuss the qualifications and characteristics of a CEO. We have we've got a draft of an announcement for the position, which includes qualifications and expected responsibilities. I think this should probably be out by about Wednesday. We have created on the chamber website a place for people to go to find out employment opportunities, and that announcement will be posted on the website, like I said, hopefully on Wednesday. The announcement will be posted at the Western Association of Chamber Executives, and that's one of the main clearinghouse places for employment in chambers around the state. We also will post we have several other places that the announcement's going to be posted, and they're all going to refer, except for the Western Association of Chamber Executives, they will all refer to the website to get that announcement. In the meantime, we've had a need to find an interim CEO to handle the business of the chamber, and the board has selected Don Doubledy. I'm sure you're all acquainted with Don. And so, like I said, we are right on the verge of posting the job. We expect to have the application time is going to be completed on the 15th of September. That's going to be the last day for applications, and after that, the board will meet and discuss who to select as the next CEO. And any questions?
Questions?
Yes.
Is it my understanding then that the selection committee for the position will be your executive board?
It will be the executive board. I don't remember everybody who's on it, but there's an executive board and a couple of three other members of the board of directors. We will be asking, we're discussing who to ask to participate in this process with us. One of the names that's floating around is Andrea Luker, and she doesn't know that till now. So we want to make it a transparent process that's open to input from the community, and that's one of the reasons that we're taking the time that we're taking is to get that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I would hope that in your considerations you would consider either the city administrator or a council member, since the city funds part of that position for that executive director. I know that would probably help us some. Thank you.
I think the reason for doing it far exceeds the use of city funds. It's important that the relationship between the chamber and the city be a close working relationship. And I think one of the ways to get that is to have the city involved in the selection process itself.
Other questions?
Okay, at this time, I'd like to introduce Don Doubledy. Don?
Thank you, Stu. Well, I'm here for business. I want to put in a plug for the 4th Annual Avocado Margarita Festival, which is coming up on the 18th of September from 11 to 6 in the parking.
There's there now, so please come and take a look if you haven't been there in a while. The picture that's up there on the overhead is the no phone zone. After this meeting, and it should be a fairly short one tonight, directly after we will be running the PWAB meeting that we had this past week, where I ran a 17-minute presentation. This is from the Oprah show. She is doing a whole campaign to get people to stop texting and talking on their cell phones when driving. It's extremely dangerous. It's worse than driving drunk. And please watch this meeting. It's about half an hour into the PWAB meeting. The video starts. Takes 17 minutes. Get your kids to watch it. Go to Oprah.com. Look at the whole thing. Sign the pledge. This is such a serious problem. I can't emphasize that enough. And when we did run this video, there was just silence when it was over. It's very impressive. It's very important. So I ask you to look at that. Susan Roper didn't get here, did she? No. Okay. There's going to be Pauline, are you talking about the Hunger Walk? Just nod yes or no. I can't hear you. No. Okay, then I will. Okay. There's going to be a Hunger Walk on September 26th, which is a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and it's going to start at St. Timothy's, and that's right across the street from the community center. And there's going to be two different walks. One is 6/10 of a mile and very level between St. Tim's and St. Peter's churches. The other is almost 3 miles, and that goes from St. Tim's to Morro Rock. And hopefully there'll be transportation back, but you might have to walk back too. So the goal is to raise some money for the, what's the official name here? The food bank. That's what it is, the food bank. There's more and more need, as you can understand, with the financial situation that the world is in and employment the way it is, for food for families in this community. So this is a way to encourage donations for $10 by 70 meals for a family. So it's just a really important value. And if you can get people to support you in walking for this, give you the $10 and get a whole bunch of people supporting you, that'll be really helpful for the food bank. That's the 26th of September. And you can get more information at www.slowfoodbank.org, slofoodbank.org. Okay. As you know, each of us sort of adopted an advisory board, and the one that I adopted was the Business Improvement District. So I went to the meeting this last week, and some of the things they're doing are adjusting the website to make it more localized and highlighting local vendors rather than the whole county. There are other people, members of our chamber, but we want to try and highlight those that are right here. There was a discussion of a scenic loop, which I'm sure will perk Mr. Barter's ears up, something that has been tried before. And there were objections from state parks and from some of the residents on the loop that was suggested. But what they are talking about now is perhaps having a loop that would be more of a boulevard to the Embarcadero, to the Rock, to Beach Street, and out to North Morro Bay. And they wanted the council to kind of at least think about that idea. They also agreed to donate some money for the Harbor Festival. They're giving $1,000 for a TV commercial, $1,000 for their green waste management, and $3,000 for local advertising. So that's what they've been up to. And also the Morro Rock is on the Savor the Central Coast event, which is coming up on Labor Day weekend also. And I think they said there were like 15 million hits on the picture of the rock that's on that website. So people are really hearing about Morro Bay. And if you get Westways, which just showed up today, has a whole spread on Morro Bay. So be sure and read your Westways magazine. It's all about us. And I think that was it for my announcements. Betty?
The Housing Trust Fund met last week, and they've been finally received a $500,000 grant that they've been expecting from the state. And most of our money now is committed to different projects around the county.
Okay. Rick?
Well, my advisory board is the Rec and Park, and thanks to Joe Woods for the tour that my wife and I went on along with the board. Very informative, went to all the city parks, talked about all the plans, things that are in planning for each one. So thanks very much for that. Thanks for including us. I appreciate being part of that group.
Noah?
Yeah, thank you. My board is the Public Works Advisory Board, so also appreciated the show on distracted driving and how important it is to tune in to the practice of driving and not be distracted. And I encourage the work that you're doing, getting out to transit into the new flexed route, is being accepted by the community, and to hear any improvements that could be suggested and general feedback. So very thankful to staff and MV Transit for putting this together. And the Public Works Advisory Board is going to be having that special hearing Wednesday, September 15th at 3 p.m. at the Community Center. And one feature of that meeting will be free transit for anyone who wants to go to that meeting, free city transit. If they mention that they're going to the Public Works Advisory Board meeting, they can get free transit to the meeting and to return from the meeting. One gap that was in there is someone that has difficulty accessing the new flex route. may have a hard time getting that free lift. And I talked with Pauline from the Senior Center today, and she suggested that it would be okay to call the Senior Center if you would like to go to that meeting to place comments, and they will arrange to find a volunteer to pick you up and bring you to the meeting. So if you would like a ride and the flex route is challenging for you, you can call the Senior Center at 772-4421, and much thanks to Pauline for offering that. So and thank you for the Public Works Advisory Board for hosting that hearing. Should be interesting to see what they come up with. And my last announcement is follow-up from our last meeting where I mentioned I was organizing some public tours to two wastewater treatment plants that are similar to what we're evaluating for our own plant here in Morro Bay and with Cayucas. And those tour dates, which we've confirmed now, are going to be coming up between August and September. We're going to be visiting the Pismo Beach water treatment plants on August 30th, that's a Monday, from 1 to 3, and then also September 19th, that's a Sunday, from 1 to 3. And then we're going also to Santa Paula to visit the PERC facility down there, which is just east of Ventura, on September 18th, Wednesday, from 10 till noon, and then also September 26th, that's a Sunday, from 1 to 3. And those are all open to the public. A lot of thanks to the operators for hosting those meetings, particularly a Sunday, which is something that they usually don't like to do, but they realize this is an important decision for us, and making available two dates for each plant is much appreciated by those facilities. And if you're interested in carpooling to any of those dates, feel free to call me at 772-7668. I'm starting to collect a list of people that are able to drive and people that would need a ride, and you can also email me. So I'm looking forward to those, and then having more discussion about what we see and what the possibilities are in the future.
A question on the timing for the Santa Paula ones. That doesn't count transportation time, does it?
No, okay. The tours is the start time.
So it's another 2 hours to get there about?
Approximately two. What I did with those times is tried to avoid any rush hour. It seems like we could slip in there just after the morning rush and just slip out of there just before the evening rush.
Okay.
So it's approximately 2 to 2.5 hours down.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Carla?
Well, I'll start off. I don't see Nancy Johnson here, so I'll remind everybody it's Dahlia Days this weekend. Joe's nodding his head over there. Wednesday is the first day of school, so please be careful as you're heading out down the streets. There will be lots of kids on bikes and new drivers and everyone heading out in every direction for school. So that's Wednesday. The advisory board that I am a liaison for is the Harbor. And we already met last month. I did watch the Planning Commission meeting the other night, though, where they did approve the amendment to the EIR for the Back Bay dredging. So hopefully that'll keep moving forward. The other thing I have, I'm going to turn over to Chief Olivas in just a second, but a few months ago we had a conversation when the new pharmacy was opening in town about the pharmaceutical take-back programs, and it kind of piggybacked on Mr. Grantham asking about some of the water and the pharmaceuticals in the water. So our chief took it from there with Bruce Keough and has set up a program. I believe it's called Operation Medicine Cabinet. He'll correct me if I'm wrong in a second. And convinced all the other cities, most all the other cities in our county, to get on board for a pharmaceutical take-back program that will be run through the police department. So I would love for him to tell you just a little bit about it real quick, and there will be more information, and I made a copy for all of you to read.
Okay, we're going to have reports from all of our department heads tonight because we have no public hearings, so we're getting a lot of information out to you. So why don't you start with that and then morph right into the rest of your report.
Okay, good evening again. Thank you, Mayor and Council, for giving this opportunity. Yes, this is a wonderful program. It's a wonderful opportunity, and I had some fears about it being introduced and us being the only facility that took back prescription medications, because you could imagine by the county we would be inundated by it. And this impacts directly our property evidence technician, who would be responsible for taking those. Then there has to be a court order, and then the prescription medications are taken to Southern California where they're incinerated. So it all kind of, timing is everything, and we got all the other chiefs to be involved in this. So you're going to see a take-back program at every law enforcement agency, as well as three of the substations with the sheriff's department. So the impact won't just be on Morro Bay. And when I say timing's everything, even DEA is involved, and they're doing a one-day take-back, which they had been planning for a while, for San Luis County as well as all the Southern California counties on September 25th. So we're using that day to kind of kick off our whole program. So I encourage you to watch the news, look for press releases, because it will be announced. But September 25th is going to be the one-day take-back. And it's not just the abuse of teenagers, but as Councilman Grantham pointed out, it's the water. It's that ends up back in our environment when pharmaceuticals are flushed down the toilet, which is not the way to dispose of them. So this is a great opportunity to help the environment, help the community, and help our youth. To go beyond that, as far as Mayor Peters wanted me to talk about a few things that was in my Friday update, I'm ecstatic to announce that Officer Doug Collins is back from Iraq. He flew back in Wednesday night. We had a contingency of about 40 people, including the Patriot Riders, about 20 department personnel. Chief Pond was there. It was one of those goosebump moments to see him hug his kid, see him hug his son, his 7-year-old son, and his girlfriend and other family members that were there. It was a really neat opportunity. We're very happy to have him home safe with us again. He will be on standing orders until about the middle of October, and then we'll work him back into a patrol assignment, which he's been gone since September. With our other vacancies, it's been a little bit difficult. We've been able to pull through, but we're really happy to have him back for that, too. On Thursday, I went over to Morro Bay Surf Company, where Project Surf Camp received their $50,000 check from Pepsi as part of the Today Show. They were involved in. It was What Do You Care About? They were one of the four finalists. The winner was supposed to get $100,000. They didn't win, but Pepsi, in the last hour before the final presentation, awarded all the runners-up a $50,000 check. So they are ecstatic. Project Surf Camp works with our youth who has challenges and gets them out and to enjoy an environment that a lot of times we take for granted, the ocean. And if you ever have a chance to be involved with it or make a donation to it, they're a phenomenal program. On Thursday night, went to the Central Coast International Footprint Association. They do a law enforcement appreciation dinner. I was proud and honored to nominate our own Detective Corporal Sue Gomes for recognition at this event, and she was recognized for her, with the staffing struggles, we've had to pull one of our detectives, which left Sue back in investigations by herself. We've been hit with a lot of significant crimes. She is up to a caseload of about 90 cases, which is just, it's too many. It's overwhelming. In addition to the second shooting we had a couple weeks ago, we had the armed robbery by knife point at the Motel 6. We had an attempted murder with a vehicle. We had a serious rape in Morro Bay, and those are piled onto all her regular caseload. I am happy to say that all suspects related to all those crimes are in custody and awaiting trial, and that's in no small part to her diligence and hard work. And I believe, to wrap it up, we are testing for a sergeant position, obviously to replace the newly appointed Commander Millard. We opened it up externally. We had 3 internal candidates and 7 candidates from other agencies, which was very enlightening and very encouraging. We obviously want to pick the best person for that position, whether it's from internal or external. And on January 30th, we're going to be swearing in our new officer that replaced Curtis Mooneyhan when he left to go back to Diablo. Sam Rodriguez will be swearing him in on Monday, and he'll be starting the 14-week FTO program. So thank you very much.
I think you meant August 30th, right? Didn't you say January
30th? Yes, I did. For Sam swearing in? Yeah, that would be this Monday, August 30th. Thank you very much.
And did you
want
to just touch on the tobacco
stain?
Right, yes.
Yeah, on August 13th, working closely with the county, I'll get their name correctly here, the SLO County Tobacco Control Program, which is a county-funded program. They go throughout the cities once or twice a year, and they do a tobacco compliance check. They use a decoy. Our decoy was 16 years old. The decoy is not trying to trick anybody. They have their ID. They present their ID. They will not lie to the clerk if they're asked for it. You have to be 18 or older to buy tobacco products. It's a very regulated product, especially for our youth. That is the...
Sue's pointing to me over there. Okay. She can pick up anything I might forget. Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council. Few things have happened over the last couple of months. One was a big orange helicopter that came to town and picked up a space capsule and dropped it in the ocean. I think that was reported pretty widely in the papers and locally within government. It all went pretty well. It was pretty exciting. And then we had a pretty big boat come in here, a multi-million-dollar boat owned by a multi-billion-dollar owner that was pretty much lighting up our phone for 2 days in a row with everyone wanting to know what it was, especially when the fog cleared. So that was some excitement that came to Cowtown here that brought some visitors and brought some recognition, which was good. Otherwise, dredging is still going on with AIS Constructors finishing up the Corps of Engineers project. They're discharging the pipeline. The pipeline runs underwater from the dredge in the sand trap area to the offshore disposal site off the sand spit. It's gone good. There's been a couple of hiccups when they first put the pipe in, but otherwise things have been going well. Since folks are watching on TV, just remind boaters, call the dredge, call the Coast Guard, call us if you got any questions about what you see out there on the water, because the pipe changes daily and it should be marked, but it's not always marked as well as it can be. So just be aware out there when you're out on the water. We've had a pretty good halibut bite going on all summer long, enough so that some of the smaller commercial boats have been getting in on it and been able to get some halibut commercially. It's been kind of a shot in the arm for the sport guys as well. And we had some white sea bass up here a few weeks ago, which is historically, this had been a pretty large area for sea bass commercially to be caught, but hasn't been recently for a number of reasons. But these last couple of years, we seem to have more sea bass showing back up here from Southern California, which is a pretty neat thing. I know a lot of folks, a lot of the local markets were getting a lot of local caught fish, which was kind of nice. And the last thing I have on here is my lifeguards. They're going to be winding down after Labor Day. Labor Day weekend, we do the full weekend and then go to weekends only after that. Coverage has been pretty much full-time since Memorial Day weekend. Crowds, as is usual during an economic downturn, have been large around the beach this summer. Our lifeguards estimate 15 to 25% larger than normal. Fortunately, we've had a relatively quiet summer from the rescue standpoint, and I think I'll attribute that to their preventative actions. They've been out there and much more proactive, and when they spot something that doesn't quite look right, they're getting out there and talking to folks and coaching them in or out before it becomes a problem. So luckily we haven't had too many more incidents than is normal. That's about it on my list.
Okay. Chief Pond?
Well, since Eric's squeezed in here, I'm going to have to scoot over and do a little reaching. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tonight I just want to let you know a little bit why our flags are at half-staff, and you'll see the fire department badges are shrouded. Our friend and colleague at San Luis City Fire Chief John Callahan passed away unexpectedly last Wednesday playing softball. And we're a pretty tight-knit family in the fire service, and San Luis City has requested some support. We've been providing some honor guard service at the mortuary, assisting San Luis Fire with that procedure. And also they've asked that we cover one of their stations during the memorial service on Friday. So we'll have an engine in San Luis covering one of their stations, as will Tascadero, Paso Robles, and CAL FIRE, covering with paramedic service from 7 in the morning until 5 in the evening. The memorial service will start at 10 o'clock at the Performing Arts Center at Cal Poly. There will be a fire engine procession memorial from 10 to 12, and then from 12 to 4 there will be a reception at the Madonna Expo Center. On some good news, the fire department is going to be competing again with our U.S. Coast Guard in our annual fitness challenge to raise funds for the kids in our community. That's going to be the same time as the Avocado and Margarita Festival, September 18th. So go down, see participate with Avocado Margarita. When you want to get away from the bands for a little while, go watch the firefighters and the Coast Guard compete. It's a fun event. It's for fundraising for the kids, and I think Todd will explain a little more about that. So I'll end with that and turn it over to our next department head.
Okay. Mr. Woods?
So Sure. I didn't know if Rob was going to get that or not. Good evening, Mayor
no,
and Council.
I'm sorry. I just skipped right over you. He was looking that way. I'll get you.
We are continually working on our maintenance consolidation. It's been a little difficult, a little slow going beginning of this fiscal year with vacations and individuals out sick and other medical issues. But we're getting back on track. We have consolidated all their work shifts, so everyone's on the same kind of work schedule. And we're hoping to get down in the Embarcadero this week and do some beautification on some of the lists that have been popping up through either your office or even members of the public. We always appreciate suggestions and ideas and requests, and you can keep forwarding those to the recreations at a pretty good price. I believe they're free. And we'll be doing some beautifications around the Civic Center area. Should be early October to mid-October. A couple of filming permits came through. Last weekend, might have been a week before, was the Juliana and Bill show. It's a reality show. We worked pretty hard with other department heads to get the filming permit through. It's usually the last minute, and we pulled it off. And they have if you've watched the show, it's an RV travel day for them, and they come through our town. Today I got a phone call from another Hollywood producer. They're doing another commercial, and they want to use Pacific Street and part of the Embarcadero, and they want that for this Friday. So it's a little bit of crunch time to get the filming permits through, but I got a lot of cooperation, and we think it's really important to get the exposure when the opportunity comes up. Mike Wilcox, your maintenance superintendent, is still working diligently with the state with his energy program. The grant monies have come through. Now the loan part of it is still going through some logistics. So Mike is finalizing those plans. And once he gets the loan approved and complete, then we will be going after HVAC units, refrigeration units, and more of the lighting retrofits as well for energy efficiency. Our adult softball fall program is on its way. It's ongoing. We have 25 teams that are signed up. Three divisions play three nights a week. This year we added a new thing out at the junior lifeguard program. In between sessions, we started a beach camp. It's not a surf camp because it's not totally into surfing, but individuals that participate. We had 21 children on our first session and 15 on the second, which was fabulous for the first time out. And kids got opportunity to bodyboard and surf and learn about the beach and nature and whatnot. So a very good program. I'm hoping to continue that for next year. Today's the first day for Estero Bay Youth Soccer. We've got quite a bit of teams. I won't get through all the details, but the program goes and ends November the 13th. The older kids play all around the county. They play Cambria, Templeton, Los Osos, Paso Robles, and also Atascadero. Labor Day tournament will be big again this year, as always. We have 24 teams signed up. Two of them have local players. So that makes 22 teams coming in from the Valley. We're always in good communication with the police and law enforcement. We've got a nice educational program that goes out to all the visitors that are coming into town, letting them know some of the rules and some of the ways to play it safe while they're in town, but still have fun. And if you want to come out for the tournament, it's September 4th, 5th, and 6th. And Monday is the championship game. If you want to make it just for that, it's 2:30 at Lila Kaiser Park. Our Oktoberfest, we're still taking sign-ups for that softball tournament. That's a co-ed. It's a 2A tournament. Men's open and also a co-ed. And we've got a maximum of 16 teams. So if you're interested in playing, please get a team together and sign up. Rockies will begin the new school year on the 25th, like school starts. That's this Wednesday. And their hours are Monday through Friday, 3 to 7, and on Saturdays from 1 to 7. The Teen Advisory Committee will be out fundraising, and their big fundraiser coming up is the operation of the snack bar on August the 28th and August the 29th. It's an ASA adult men's softball tournament at Lila Kaiser. So as the teens adopt the park and keep it clean, they're also making a little bit of money doing the snack bar. And 50% of that will go back into their TAC fund, and the other half will go back into the general fund. So their teens are out there trying to make a difference and trying to contribute. And that concludes my report. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Liebig.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Want to report again on the SpaceX exercise. I forwarded the email of thanks from SpaceX, and they linked to their video, which was quite interesting to see the chutes deploy and the craft land in the ocean. The Planning Commission at their last meeting approved the revisions to the master street tree list, and that'll be coming to City Council soon. At our wastewater treatment plant, our major emphasis currently is getting the EIR, draft EIR out, and we anticipate releasing that as a public draft on or about September 1st. Some bittersweet news, I guess, on the wastewater treatment plant. The composting program put out their last windrow until we figure out a new transit vehicles, the Morro Bay Transit Center, and at Public Services regarding that. The AB 811 program was to provide low interest loans for solar. Has recently, from what I understand, has been suspended due to some litigation. So we don't know when, if that's coming back or not. And the regional transportation plan, which is how we plan the region's transportation, is out for public review. And it's, I have a draft of it with me. It's quite a document to review. As people will notice, there's not a whole lot of local projects in there, mainly projects on the main transportation routes, 46, 101. Large population centers are the main recipients of the project. Morro Bay's projects are in the nature of non-motorized transportation, which compete better, and some downtown enhancement projects, which we've listed in there, but will hopefully coincide with our downtown enhancement program. Just want to state economy has shrunk. There's less regional funds available for these projects. I think the SLOCOG executive director said it best, that the days of money for local street programs is either suspended for a while or gone forever. We won't see regional money used for paving projects. We're going to have to fund that money ourselves through our own gas tax revenue that we receive back from the state, or local sales tax initiatives. And with that, I concludes my report for this evening.
Betty, do you have a question?
Yes. I did not realize we were all going to report on our advisory committees, and I don't want promotions to feel left out. So if I might.
Ms. Winholz, do you mind if I ask Mr. Liebig a question before you proceed there? Regarding the regional transportation plan, was Highway 1 also included in that major transit?
No.
So
except for the bike lane along Highway 1.
In your opinion, do you think any sort of comments would help increase our chances, or is it pretty much locked in?
You know, the comment period is open until October, so it never hurts to comment on it. But the money tends to be competitive. It has to be approved by the California Transportation Commission. They're looking to get the biggest bang for the buck to serve the largest populations with that money. So it's not a fruitless effort, but we can't expect miracles from our comments.
Most of it's going along the 101 corridor and things like 46 widening and stuff. It's major thoroughfare stuff where it's going, what little there is.
So, okay, Betty.
Just briefly, the promotions committee meets prior to the T-bid, and they discuss similar issues to what you raised, so I won't reiterate those other than to say we also had a very fine presentation from the Harbor Fest with a new video, and I'm in hopes that there's a link to that that people will be able to see either through the Chamber website and or the city website. In addition to that, I'd like to acknowledge Mr. Woods' office for helping with a promotion that happened last Thursday down near the Rock, actually at Coleman Park, for a group that was promoting AB 1998, which is the plastic bag once use and that the governor is supporting and the assembly had passed, and hopefully the Senate will pass, and maybe Integrated Waste has something to say about that. But it was a last-minute 48-hour thing, and Mr. Woods just came through beautifully to blow up a 30-foot air turtle. And Morro Bay was once again on TV because of it. So appreciate that on the news. But two different TV channels and two different newspapers. And then I just want to ask Mr. Smuckler or Mr. Leivick, how are we getting out the word about this transit meeting? Are we putting out notices through the riders on the dialer and are we also I don't know, how else can we do that? I know that the seniors have website connections to the seniors, and maybe it can go out that way as well.
It's on the city's website, notification. There's flyers on the transit. There's flyers at the Morro Bay Transit Center, and that's a good idea of linking the seniors' website. And I'll have Ms. Burlingame check into that and getting that link set up.
I got one. Can I go? I have a question.
Okay.
Yes, good evening, Council. Prior to the regular meeting, Council met in closed session to discuss real property negotiations. The property discussed was 7081 Market Street. No action was taken. It requires reporting under the Brown Act. The other item listed on the closed session, labor negotiations, was not discussed and was continued till next week.
Okay. And with that, we'll open public comment. I appreciate your patience. There's just a lot of information that we need to get out sometimes, and this was the meeting to do it. So we will open public comment.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. My name is Todd Gailey, longtime resident of Morro Bay. Engineer paramedic for the fire department here. I just want to touch on what Chief Pond mentioned as far as our upcoming fundraiser, the fire department versus the local Coast Guard station. We've done this. This will be our fourth year that we've done this fundraiser. The entire event is a fitness competition between our two agencies, and the whole purpose is to raise money for the Morro Bay Community Foundation, which those of you who do not know about the Morro Bay Community Foundation, please look them up. They're a great foundation. They give scholarships to local kids to do outdoor recreational opportunities, junior lifeguards, dance classes, basically any of the sports leagues, any Parks and Rec program. They give partial scholarships to kids. So it's really one of the ways that we can give back to our community and keep those kids off the streets, keep them doing team activities and fun stuff. So this event, as was mentioned earlier, is on September 18th. It's actually at 10 a.m. It's the same day as the Avocado Margarita Festival. We will be wrapping up by the time the Avocado Margarita Festival starts. So if everybody wants to come out at 10 o'clock, we'll be down at Coleman Beach. You can witness this competition. And there will actually be one event where we will need 10 to 20 people to participate in making a specific challenge a little harder. So come down, watch us. We had a handful of local businesses sponsor us. We were selling t-shirts. It's a Rescue Challenge 2010. The Coast Guard and Fire Department emblem on the back, and the handful of businesses that really helped sponsor this event. So last year we raised over $4,600 for the Morro Bay Community Foundation, and like I said, this is our fourth time, and each time we've been trying to break that $5,000 mark. So that's our goal this year, and I really think we have a chance of doing that. So we'll be selling T-shirts and raffle tickets at the fire station, at Fitness Works, the local gym. They're supporting us at the Coast Guard station. And also you'll see us on our own time, on our days off, in front of Albertsons selling these shirts and raffle tickets. So you can get a hold of me, Todd, at the fire department or at the Coast Guard station or the gym if you want to help us out.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you guys plan on taking home the victory again this year?
Oh, again, as you mentioned, yeah, again. Just want to throw that out there. All three times so far, I fired from this one. So
you're defending your title.
A little competitive spirit between the two agencies. All for good stuff. So, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and community members. My name is Keith Taylor. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I came here tonight just to congratulate Ryan Millard on being appointed the commander, and to thank our chief, Tim Olivas, for selecting him. And I know that was a tough thing to do, but I think he did the best for all of us in the community, because he sort of reminds me of having another Tim, and he's out there talking to us, and he's really important for all of us. So I just want to say thank you and congratulations to Tim. And I walk down the Embarcadero every day. I'm going to tell you what, boy, the fire department's going to be, it's going to be tough, because those guys in the Coast Guard are working out every day on the pier trying to win this one. So I'm sure the fire department will really have to work at this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's hoping my face looks familiar. Hi. Madam Mayor, City Council, City Staff, my name is Deanna Kennedy. And I really wanted to take this opportunity to come up and thank everyone for voting for me. And moreover, we had such a good turnout, and I researched the past numbers, so I say let's just keep going for it till November. And yes, I'm still in the running. I actually was going to just have that be my one comment. However, I was speaking to a few individuals, and one even today, at 63, and I'll repeat that, 805. 440-9263. Just know that you're not alone out there, and that we do have the one of the programs, which I think is fantastic. Most of you that fire a weapon, that is, know that we have a tremendous hearing loss, and I know with myself I do, and they have a great program for hearing aids. And you can get hearing aids that would normally cost $4,000, and you get those for free.
Wow.
So keep that in mind, whether you need one, two. And they're not the big ones they used to hang off the side of your head. These are the little small ones, because I know I'm sort of vain myself. So anyway, please use my phone number. If I don't answer, leave me a message, and leave me your phone number twice, please. And have a good evening. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, and staff. My name is Pauline Stansberry. I live at 145 Java. I am a senior in Morro Bay, and I am the mother hen of the Morro Bay seniors, and also the president. I have got many, many complaints, questions, you name it, about the city transit. And I do have some copies and names. I didn't get copies made to give to you. But I want to take the advantage of this meeting over the air to invite all the Morro Bay seniors, their friends, who are affected by the lack of transportation to come to the September 15th, what did you call it, transit, special transit meeting at the Seniors Community Center. And I will make copies of this for one of the girls over there to just get us back some service. They're just crying out there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good
evening, Madam Mayor, distinguished members of the council. My name is Gayska Velasquez. I reside at 561 La Jolla. And I'm with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, SLOCOG, otherwise known as. And I just wanted to make comment on agenda item A7, the award of contract for the Cal-Portland Construction for the construction of the North Main bike lanes, or otherwise known as North Main Street bike lanes and street improvement project. As you know, the ARRA, or American Reinvestment and Recovery Act of 2008, designated MPOs such as SLOCOG to fund projects throughout the county, transportation related. And we're as excited as you are today to award this contract. As the staff report mentioned, there is a deadline of September 30th to obligate these funds or to award construction. And it mentioned that we could lose the funds if that didn't happen. And that's not just to the city or even to the county. We could stand to lose the funds statewide. And awarding this contract shows that we do deliver projects in the county, in Morro Bay, and in the state, which will give us the ability to apply for future funding if we show that we do deliver these projects. It's a great project as well. SLOCOG loves the project because it's multimodal. It increases safety for not only the cyclists, but also the drivers, giving us that visibility, giving the cyclists visibility. Cars know where they're going. They know where the cars are. It's just a great project. And in addition, it was a great benefit that the jobs created by the project will go to Central Coast residents. Perhaps not in this county, but maybe. But that was a great addition. So we just wanted to support the contract, and we're just really happy to see this going. And I could take questions on anything else, too, while I'm here. But
thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Ken Vesterfeld, Morro Bay resident. If you would indulge me, I'd like to talk on item D2. And the reason why I'd like to do that, I'd like to go home. This morning at 3:30, we got a call from our son and his wife that they were on their way to the hospital. And at 10:41 this morning, our grandson was born, 6 pounds, 15 ounces, 20 inches long. And it's still amazing how you can see this.
Congratulations.
This little thing that is there, and very, very wonderful, and everything was fine, and we praise anybody that helped us with that. Discussion on the general plan, local coastal plan, I know you're going to be talking about that. I've heard that one of the things that might be an option is throwing out this whole plan that was worked on for many, many years. Not only was it worked on by the Planning Commission, it was worked on by staff. It also was worked on by the public that showed up in many of the public things.
Itself. In your report, staff provided a breakdown of the hours and the average cost for Mr. Armani's project to give you an understanding about the time it takes to process these projects as related to the fee charges. On page 1 of your report, staff notes that a new construction project would be $3,620 for a use permit, and $7,240 for a waterfront portion of the fee, for a total of $10,860. This fee is correct for the Armani project comparison. However, the total fees now are $11,043 because of the increase from July 1st of this year. On page 2, the staff notes that they spent approximately 83 hours, with 40 of those hours being dedicated to the processing of the environmental document. All in all, the report says the total was $4,565 of staff time for the project. I want to offer a breakdown of the total cost of the fees that may have not been clear in your report. First, the mitigated negative declaration, or the MND, was approximately 40 hours for a cost of $2,475. This is a separate fee charged by the city for the MND, which is $3,154. Secondly, there was a council appeal at the 14 hours for $770. The MND and the council appeal time should not be taken into consideration for the total amount of time spent for processing this project because there are separate fees charged. Therefore, the bottom line was approximately 24 hours for reviewing the project, or $1,320 based on the staff's cost estimate. In the case of a new construction project that would be similar to the processing of Mr. Armani's project, as an applicant would be charged $11,043 for the conditional use permit and the waterfront master plan waterfront master plan fee plus $3,154 for the MND for a total of $14,197. I understand there can be a lot of time spent on processing waterfront projects, and I'm not taking issue with the MND fee. However, my issue is the waterfront master plan fee of 200% times the base permit fee being added to these projects. I support staff's recommendation that the fee be reduced at least to 100%, but I would like to also ask the council that you go one step further and grant a further reduction to smaller and less work-intensive projects. For example, I am representing another project that the construction cost is estimated at $75,000. Since the waterfront master plan fee does not take into account a small project, this business is going to be required to pay the same fees as a project that may cost as upwards of $2 million. I would like to encourage the council to consider a tiered fee structure so that the small projects are not required to pay such as this example of nearly 20% of the value of the project fee and permit fees. I see I'm out of time, but I would encourage the council to please take into consideration the fee reduction, and staff might have some other ideas for other fee reductions for that particular fee. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, Council, I'm Don Double D, and I'm speaking now as a private citizen. I would like to speak on item D2. I was a member of the Planning Commission for 9 years. The last several years of that term, we spent working hours and hours and hours on the general plan, which you're going to be discussing this evening. I'm really hoping that you can pick up from where we left off on that. It would be a shame to throw that out. We had lots and lots of public input, and I think that document really does, if you read it carefully, reflect some of the needs and desires of our citizens and some of the things that we need to accomplish in order to make this a better city. So please don't throw all that work out. It was an awful lot of work, and please go on the merit of the work that was done.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor and council members and staff. My name is Lexi Brown, and I am a resident of Los Osos, but I'm here tonight as the new assistant director of the Morro Bay National Estuary Program. And I wanted to thank all of you for your continued support of our program, especially many of you participated in our recent EPA site visit. Especially Sue and Eric gave our visitors a very nice tour of the harbor. It was a highlight of the visit. That was a success for our program, and we really appreciate all the time and effort that all of you put towards that. I also wanted to let you know that we will have a new director for the program starting November 1st, if you've not heard. Adrienne Harris will be our new director. She's coming from Washington, D.C. She was recently a policy analyst at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And in the interim, we have Mike Molteri continuing to be our interim director very graciously, as he is supposed to be retired. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome, Lexi.
A word with public testimony at every step along the way. So the document gets sent up to the Coastal Commission, and they do nothing with it. They have given no feedback to us substantive on what went on up there. They simply sat on it. Having sat on it for 5 years, they now say, well, we there was other things that we wanted, and so it's now stale. They haven't read it, but it's stale in their eyes. I'm sorry I'm not being too polite about this, but I really think you have to call their bluff on this. They didn't do their job. We did our job. Our town did our job. This council did its job. The Planning Commission did its job. The people of this town did their job. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, thousands of hours of staff time, many tens of thousands of dollars of our own budget from our own staff. The public input was tremendous on this thing, from all kinds of workshops to public testimony to you name it, thousands of emails that we went through, reviewed. I mean, it was just an awesome amount of work. We did our part. Two generations of your planning commission did it, the generation that I sat on and the generation that followed us. And then this council, two of you at least, voted to send that thing to the Coastal Commission. And now they're trying to say that there was something lacking in what we did when they haven't even read the document or given us any substantive review for it. The last part of the staff recommendation is, I'm sorry, but very cavalier, and it says, well, we'll just, you know, without saying it, we'll just ignore all of that public process, all of that time, all of that money, and we'll just go back to the draft that was put on the shelf originally by Crawford Moultrie and ignore that public process. If you follow that recommendation, it would be like the saying of, we had to bomb the village to save it. There's a huge amount of work that went into that thing. It's a very good document, and I just can't recommend highly enough that you not buy into the bluff that's being given to you by them. If you're going to do any restarting on it, my recommendation would be leave the document where it is for now. Meanwhile, go through the public process to review that document to clean up any of the things that have changed in the last 5 years, and then take it forward from there at a later date. But do it when budget permits. It's a very expensive process. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Dorothy Cutter. I also want to speak on D2. I'd like to correct some of the misinformation that you just received, and that is that after the thousands of dollars that the city spent on consultants and all the public input, and yes, there were numerous meetings, lots of public input, after the document was submitted and changed by the consultants and approved, a lot of unauthorized changes were made to that document by some of the members on the Planning Commission, I would say one, actually the previous speaker, and unauthorized changes were made by the staff. And that's the document that was sent to the Coastal Commission. And they then received a lot of public input. In other words, the document that they received was not the document that the public wanted. Unfortunately, it was sent to the Coastal Commission. The changes should have been made before it was sent. And so now you're stuck with this old document that really does not reflect what the consultants put together and what the public input was. And so maybe what you need to do is go back to the one you had before, the one you're operating under now, and maybe have some public input about some changes that would reflect what the community needs now. But I would certainly not accept the document that they're sending back. It does not reflect what the community wanted. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any comments on comments? All right, we'll bring it back to the council, and we will take a short break and come back. Thank you. Okay, I believe we're back on, Betty. All right, we're going to move on to our consent agenda. And did anyone want to pull anything? I wanted to pull A5. Anyone have anything else?
I'm going to pull the minutes, please, A1, okay. And 4, 6, 7, and 8. Does that take care of yours, Ms. Borchard?
Okay, 6, 7, and 8. Okay.
A7.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. So may I hear a motion?
Mm-hmm. So then I would move approval of A1.
With those corrections.
With that correction, please.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And B4, Betty. A4, sorry.
A4 is the ordinance regarding the city manager's point. The power to appoint, and it's taking back that information, taking back, we talked about it before. I'm sorry, I'm not looking at it correctly, but I just want to raise my concern to the council and really maybe shouldn't have pulled this, but just to say I hope that we'll come back and revisit this, where we had talked about having at least some input of some kind when we hire department heads. That's how we got to meet Ms. Slayton, that the council was actually involved with that because of this ordinance. And I think that's a valuable piece that is fed to the city manager when that person hires, that they have our reflections on that. So I won't put that in here now. We'll just pass this, but I will agendize that for later.
Okay. All right.
So I would move approval of A4.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
None.
All right. And A5. This one's mine. And Mr. Leivick, I'm sorry I didn't ask you earlier, but apparently we have some old pipes that we didn't know we had that were still in operation in the city. And I just wanted you to make that public, the explanation, and so people know to call if they are having those problems.
Yes. Napa Avenue, we discovered an old steel line there that was still in service, providing water to people's homes. And those steel lines corrode. You'll get brown water from those steel lines. If you do get that brown water, you should call the Public Services Department at 772-6261 and report that to us so that hopefully we've found the last of them, but I'm not quite so sure that we have. The water infrastructure was put in many years ago, and we're finding new things out all the time.
How many homes were on this one?
I'm not 100% sure. I think it was a short block there, so about 8 homes were on that line.
Oh,
yes.
My gosh. Okay.
I have a couple of questions, if you don't mind, because I was going to pull this as well. Mr. Leivick, on page 2, where it starts about state water project deliveries, and you're talking about let me see if I'm in the right place here. It's the part where it talks about we're going to continue to run the wells in order to clean them out.
Yes.
And that's not where I said that it was, but I think you know where I'm talking. Are we still going to be doing that even if we're not using that water through the brackish system?
No, we wouldn't be running those to waste the water.
Okay.
We would be putting it to beneficial use into our system.
So
when the state water doesn't meet our demands, mm-hmm. then we'd be running those wells.
Okay. And then in that first paragraph on that section, recent division activities, the part where we had this big accident up on the hill, and you talk about the amount hasn't been settled yet, what it will cost us. Does that come out of our insurance money, or will that come out of the water fund?
That's out of CJPIA, out of the insurance fund.
So it won't deplete our water?
Right. No, it's not out of our water fund whatsoever.
Great. And then my last question is, on the last page under the interference study, during the process of performing this, Fish and Game wasn't comfortable with what was going on. Can you just, maybe I should have asked this privately, but how are we making these mistakes?
We have a private consultant that was doing that work. Mm-hmm. They felt that they had the proper permits.
Okay.
They contacted Fish and Game and told them what they were doing. They contacted the biologist from Fish and Game and didn't talk to the warden from Fish and Game. So the warden came out. I was actually out on site when the warden showed up there, and she had no idea what was going on in the mm-hmm. creek when she showed up there. When she understood and saw the flow measuring devices, mm-hmm. She was more satisfied that this was a temporary action, and the consultant needed to do some mitigation measures, planting some willows along the creek once they took out their temporary flow measuring devices.
Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of protocol that we need to learn, or they need to learn, or
I think it was a learning experience for both of us, probably more for our consultant than for us. Not just to talk, biologist to biologist, but to actually talk to the enforcement folks too.
Cool. And just for information, are we now below the 1.4 feet?
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Carlos seconded. All right. A7, Betty.
A7 is regarding the contract for our bike lanes, and I wanted it, the public already made it public. I wanted to make sure that people knew that it was going to be happening, and I also wanted to compliment the Public Services Department for giving us the bid so we could see that. My only question there is it was quite obvious that two of the eight companies had very different bids on the products that they were purchasing as opposed to some of the others, like the if I had like the fire hydrant things, and it looks like equipment that they would be buying and putting in for us. Is that the quality of the product they're buying, or why is there such a discrepancy there?
If I knew how contractors bid jobs, I probably wouldn't be doing this. It's all part of the art of the game, how they think they're going to win. Sometimes it has to do with the exact price. Other times it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Some contractors will bid high on a particular item if they think extremely high in a particular item. I don't think we have that case in this one. If they expect you're really going to do more of that than you think you are, so that they can recoup that money through change orders.
Mm-hmm.
Why one item is different from another contractor's bid, I don't know. Cal Portland, their asphalt costs were very low, mm-hmm. But they also supply the product. They're what Union Asphalt used to be, so they sell it to themselves.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that. I would move approval of A7.
I second with a quick discussion.
Sure, okay.
I also just wanted to acknowledge that some of our local contractors are going to be subcontracting in that award, which because of those federal funds wasn't something that was necessarily qualifying for our local contractor preference program, but it's certainly a nice element to this, and I'm thankful for that as well.
Okay. All in favor?
I'm sorry.
One more question.
Where's the $43,200 contingency fund coming from?
That would be coming from the when I brought this forward last time, we had an engineer's estimate, and the overall project cost was somewhere around $518,000. That we're getting $480,000 from ERA funds. The remaining amount we had budgeted from, there's some STIP money, and the acronym is escaping me, basically state transportation money that we had earmarked for North Main Street bike lanes years ago, about $30,000. We have bike lane money that we collect through the state gas tax, and then an allocation, some of the, if need be, an allocation from Measure Q money for that. So that's where those remaining funds, but we're far underneath our engineer's estimate. In fact, we're underneath the grant amount, so we should be able to cover most of our, all of our construction and 90% of our construction management with that amount.
You know, I'm in a real quandary with this. I probably made a mistake by going on the internet today and looking up U.S. debt clock. And when I checked it at 3:44 this afternoon, it was $13,379,164,987,263.88. Here's this entity now going to give us $500,000 for a bike lane. I'm just shaking my head thinking this is really crazy, you know, and the way our system is, you're rewarded by taking more, to equate this, it's $43,300 to every living person in the United States, every citizen, every man, woman, child. And, you know, I just started thinking this is really irresponsible. It's really kind of good for the city of Morro Bay. It's a lot of people aren't going to look at this the same way I do. But by the time I got done getting that information, the debt had gone up another $17 million. I was only on the internet for 10 minutes. So, you know, just out of the way I feel on this, I see this thing as going forward, but I'm just going to have to vote no. I see it as irresponsible. I think cities need to take a lead and say, you know what, pay down your debt so China's not taking over our cities. They're the ones that's holding all our debts. It's just crazy.
I do know I voted last time to because Mr. Dillon gave us such a compelling argument as to why we needed another wastewater treatment collections person, and that position still hasn't even been filled yet. So as much as it was an emergency that they had to have this person, they haven't even filled the position. So until that position's filled, I'm not ready to fill another. And considering that the employees just got a 4% pay raise, and we have not had an opportunity yet to address any of the benefit packages or tiered benefits, I won't support another employee hire.
Is there any reason for the delay in the hiring situation?
There was a delay through the budget process to see how the staff reductions were going to work out, to see if one of the people that were laid off could possibly fill that role. When it was determined that that wasn't suitable, we went back to the candidates that we had interviewed to see if they were still interested. We have a lot going on right now, so that took longer than we anticipated would. I know that we're in conversations with the finalist candidate, and I'm trying to encourage him to leave his present employer and take the job with the City of Morro Bay.
Okay. Do you have anything to add, Andrea?
No, I think Mr. Levick, I guess the answer is yes. Mr. Levick did a good job. We did delay. We went out for the position pretty immediately after the council authorized it, but when we went through our budget process and we understood that we were going to be losing positions, there was certainly a potential that we had an existing city employee that was going to, or a couple of city employees that might be able to fill that existing position. So we were between a rock and a hard place, I guess. We didn't want to fill the position immediately and then have a city employee be out, so we did delay it. But I would just reiterate the importance of having your collections workers fully staffed. It's extremely important, and we're happy to provide some additional documentation about what unfortunately won't get done if we don't fill a position, but it hopefully won't need to go there.
Okay. Any further discussion?
My memory is that this one isn't, but the new position was actually a new position. It was an extra position that was being, so we were really building up this department. So I'm okay with, if we hire this new person, then that kind of fills.
My understanding from the correspondence from Mr. Wade today was that two of the current employees and potentially the third one hired would be eligible for this position anyway. So I think you end up back where we were. If somebody promotes into it, then it just leaves that bottom position open again that we were apprehensive in filling in the first place at this point in time.
Did you have another comment there?
No, that is true, that there are, you know, two employees that could fill that position, and potentially the new position, then we wouldn't need to come back to council for authorization to fill that vacancy at that time.
And my question would be in regards to the upcoming negotiations. I concur with my colleagues regarding the benefits and the concerns there, and I'm wondering if we could actually go into those negotiations, and the timing of that would allow us to start to address those concerns and then follow up with considering that hire.
We certainly are clear that the council wants to address the benefit package. Those negotiations, that's for a contract that will cover these employees, which is your SEIU employees. That contract expires June of 2011. We'll be starting negotiations in the future, not immediately. But anything that you decide, your current contract covers your employees through June of 2011. So if you held back on hiring this position, it would be until another year. Is that clear?
Not if somebody promotes from within already.
You're correct. I guess I'll go back. If somebody promoted, then we would come back for authorization to fill that position, and then you're delaying the decision for probably 8 months. I think my concern is that we came to you with the additional position a few months ago, knowing with a push that we needed to fill this additional position. Now that we've got the unfortunate situation where we lost a worker, we're asking to fill that position as well. I would be extremely concerned, and if we don't fill this position, and we'll certainly bring back to you information about what very well may fall through the cracks if we don't. I think there's been some additional requirements that we have with the collection system, and I'll let Mr. Leivick, unless I'm just making that up, that was the part of the emphasis of adding the position in the first place, the position that we haven't yet hired for.
All right. We'll move on to item D1, which is the status report and review of the permit fee for the waterfront projects. Mr. Leivick.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. This item you last saw last July with an update to the waterfront plan master fee schedule amounts. At that point in time, there were no projects to report on. We have had one project since the time, and as been previously stated during the public testimony, this is applied to all projects within the PD overlay within the waterfront master plan. The fee is 200%, so it's the base fee plus two times this amount, and it does not include the fees for environmental documentation, variance, or noticing, which are collected separately. We have completed the processing of the project, one of the projects at 571 Embarcadero within the waterfront master plan area, and we have it was for a fairly small project, approximately 80 square feet for relocation of a patio area and 80 square feet of the new public access, lateral public access. It was at the SALT building is where the project was. As we previously heard, it's estimated that it took approximately 83 hours to work on this project, with 40 hours that were used for processing the environmental documents. So it's determined that the at that cost, if you assumed majority of the work was provided by a associate planner, the fees were approximately $4,565. This was a very small project, not typical of a brand new project, on which may cause more processing time. You know, we've heard recommendations to reduce the fees by 100%, by 200%. I'm not sure that that really provides a real accurate indication of what the fees should be. One of my suggestion for this project, or perhaps planning projects in general, is we take the fee in as a deposit and track our time and charge on a time and materials basis for what are fully loaded rates, so we capture the salaries plus the overhead for these projects. That concludes my staff report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, questions? Betty?
Thank you. First, thank you for offering us some choices at the end. I thought it was good that there's more than one way we can attack this issue. I also want to just note that it's interesting that a number of the changes that seem to occur within our process happen at the Coastal Commission level, which makes me wonder if we're in sync with them, so we don't offer our developers more conflict at that level. And so maybe the discussion you all had with them last month may have been part of that. I don't know. But that I thought that was I've seen that on a number of projects that have come back changed because we at this level didn't try to match what's with the how they're interpreting the Coastal Act, I guess. But my question is, and I have two questions. In Attachment 2, and this is actually kind of a side issue, I note that the noticing seems to be happening in-house. I thought we were contracting out for noticing. Or is that just the staff person that's contracting with the outside company?
We were requiring the applicants to go to SLOCO data mm-hmm. for their noticing. At the master fee schedule time, we had an item in there to include noticing by city staff. We have a subscription. We basically get the same data now that SLOCO data gets.
Mm-hmm.
And we pay an annual amount that's divided amongst the various departments at about $17,000 a year for this GIS information.
Mm-hmm.
And when we brought it back at the time of the master fee schedule, we thought this would be a way to recoup some of those costs for our city GIS data. We're updated from the county on a weekly basis, so it's double what the normal fees would be. An amendment is $17.95.
It's a different price.
So you double that fee to get the surcharge okay. for the project.
I get that. Thank you. And then I don't know if you want to comment yet on the contact. Do you want to just do questions?
Well, okay. Anybody else got questions?
I'm interested to hear what your thoughts would be on the tiered rate concept compared to what you just suggested as far as a time and materials type billing.
Tiered rate is still an approximation of what the rates would be. Some people will pay more than what it costs, and some people will pay less than what the actual costs are. It makes it easier for staff to use the tiered rate. We don't have to do a detailed time tracking of our time, but I think a time and materials basis gives the most accurate representation of what the true cost of projects are.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Comments? Betty, you want to start?
Well, it sounds like we have at least three choices that we can choose from. One is this time and materials, and I don't know if that's the same or different from the last comment in the conclusion, where we would charge for each of the different the three different times it comes back to the city, at the planning level concept, at the city council concept, and then back to planning for precise. But those sound like bulk prices to me.
That would be a approximated mm-hmm. averaged rate for per project, except we would collect it at different times through the process.
Which makes it one step closer to being more accurate,
yes.
Whereas time and materials would be the accurate.
The accurate, but the downside of time and materials is we have to be accurate. With our tracking of our time
mm-hmm.
and to recoup all those costs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I like either of those. I think to reflect what the applicant would be more comfortable with, and maybe more without this 200%. I think that's covered us, and maybe we've lost in the past and some developers have gained, mm-hmm. but this is going to even it out for that particular person, which will make it more fair.
Okay. Rick?
The option of the surcharge being set at 100% above the existing fee schedule to me seems fair and a balanced way to go about it. So I'd go with that.
Okay.
I'm finding myself interested in the time and materials. I think that respects smaller projects' concerns. I guess my concern with that option is the amount of staff time that would be involved to track. That is, do you feel that's not going to be too cumbersome, or you know, it's tough to tell now. Would you like to try that for an interim period, or is that getting to be too much effort and not enough stability for the applicants?
We could bring this back in another year with whatever methodology you choose. I've been in employment situations where I've had to track my time. It's really, once you have the system set up, it's not that difficult. Once you get the routine set up, it's not that difficult to do.
And you can do it online, can't you?
We could use Excel spreadsheet, for example, but it's just setting up that routine where you would do that on a daily or semi-daily basis and enter your time into the spreadsheet. And I would have to work with our finance department to set up a way to bill the applicants. I would still suggest that we take in a fee up front as a deposit against that time and materials time, so we're not having to basically be in the rears all the time on this.
And to finish up my comments, I support you on that as well.
Carla?
I agree. I think a deposit's always a good idea from anybody in construction these days. And, you know, one of the things that caught my eye, and I didn't realize because I wasn't on the council, when I asked about this, and it came forward a year ago, that Mr. Grantham had asked about it in 2007. So this has been an ongoing concern that council members have had from hearing from the community. And we mandate those leaseholders to do the upgrades for us, and then we're charging 200% higher fees. So it kind of seems very unfair to me. I would support the time and materials with the deposit up front, and maybe we could do it the same as we've done and track it for a year and make sure it's successful. But I would lean towards that.
Well, and I think the reason we didn't hear anything on it for so long is because there wasn't a project where it was applicable. So we had to wait until we had something. And even this one is very small. It's not a big thing to make the judgment on. So I'm a little confused. I've heard tiered, I've heard time and materials, and I've heard 100% markup. Are those all part of the same thing? Or
More equitable collection of those fees from the various projects, because it's still the same, a small project may pay the same fee as a larger project. On average, it all equals out. But to that particular person that has the small project, it just may not seem as fair as the larger project.
All right. So if we were going to go with the time and materials, and as one who has had to keep track of my time all the time, it's a burden. It's not easy, especially when you're working on a bunch of different things at once. But a lot of businesses do it, so it's not an insurmountable challenge. But if we're going to do the time and materials, are we going to have a tiered deposit? And that's what I'm thinking, rather than go for a 200% deposit or whatever, or maybe have the deposit based on square footage or something like that. Would that be reasonable? Because I think you need to have that deposit up front so that you make sure that we're getting this stuff paid, not after the fact. How does that sound?
You know, at this point in time, we haven't really set up what that tiered fee structure would be, nor a tiered deposit structure would be. Maybe it would be best to bring back to you that more formalized. It would be a revision to our master fee schedule. Okay. So bring that back to you as a revision to the master fee schedule for you to act on. That way you can see what those dollar amounts would be for the deposits instead of sitting here, you know, knowing what they should be.
Right. So the direction, if I'm understanding this correctly, of council is we want to bill by time and materials but have a deposit up front to work against. Right?
Sounds good.
Okay. So we'd like to have that back. Do we need a motion on that, or is just general direction sufficient?
Is this going to be a year trial basis and reeval after a year?
Yeah. Mr. Schultz?
That sounds like a motion.
Okay. I'd like a motion.
Okay.
And we still need to talk about the request of this particular applicant for their refund.
Yeah, that's the second item,
Thank you.
Do this one first. Okay. So somebody want to make the motion?
I would, but first, Mr. Livick, just to be clear, would you like to look at this revision and then bring that back to us as a whole, or would you like this motion for the time and materials concept, and then you can do that revision on your own time for the deposit?
I'll leave that motion to for council to make that decision. My preference would be time and materials with a tiered deposit, and we would make recommendations on what that deposit should be.
Okay. With that, I move that the City Council receive this report and make the adjustment to the waterfront master fee schedule to time charge time and materials with an upfront deposit that is tiered on the basis of the size of the project, and includes an evaluation of the effectiveness of the program in 1 year.
Second.
Well done. Well stated. Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. Now we have the second issue about the refund. And could you just review the facts on that again, please? Because we got some different numbers from Kathy, and I wasn't. I'm sorry.
It really isn't properly noticed. You certainly discuss it real quick, but it's got to come back to you. It's not properly noticed. If you look at our noticing, it really was a tack on item and didn't realize it till after the agenda was set. Okay. So really, it should just be the master fee schedule.
All right, so it's a direction instead of a motion.
I think the direction would be whether you wanted to bring it back is really the direction you should give council to give staff, so they know whether it's something that you at least want coming back to you.
Right, okay. All right, so we will change the motion over to a direction, which I think is what I asked for in the first place. Okay.
That's assuming we want to go there. I'm not sure I want to go back and review an old project, so I'm happy to leave it as is.
No, wait a minute. We're talking about the motion we just made,
no,
aren't we?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to the next item, which is the refund of the Imani fees.
Okay.
Which
okay.
really is not
That's
listed.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all so right. just direction on whether you want that to come back at
all
a future
right.
agenda item.
You're saying you're not sure you want it to come back?
Yes, I would not be in favor. It's a project that's been done. It's water under the bridge. Our new policy will start in the future, and so I think that I'm happy with the way it is.
Okay. How do other people feel about
that? If we're passing this tonight and that project has yet to begin, I would be willing to listen to the opportunity or the reason they might want adjustments.
Okay. Rick?
I'd listen. Yeah.
Postal Commission in June of 1981. Our general plan was also adopted by the City Council in 1988. These two plans have received minor revisions in the past, but not comprehensive updates. Given the complexity of the two plans and the redundancies of many of the objectives and policies in these documents, the decision was made to combine and simplify the two plans. In 1998, the City of Morro Bay hired the consulting firm of Crawford, Matari, and Clark to update the general plan and the local coastal plan. The purpose of this update was to combine these documents and to review policy language for internal consistency and consistency with the Coastal Act. Prior to this update, the general plan and local coastal program existed as two separate documents, and the primary goal was to put those into one document. The changes made were supposed to be largely procedural and were aimed at to improve use and the clarity of the document. No changes were supposed to be made to land use designations or zoning designations that resulted in any type of environmental issues or increased density, increased population potential, or major infrastructure upgrades. After the 2000 public draft was circulated for review, a subcommittee of the Planning Commission reviewed the draft document and made further major changes to the public draft. It then went through approximately 25 Planning Commission public hearings from October 2001 through November 2003. In 2004, the City Council held three public hearings, and the General Plan LCP update was finally approved by the City Council and submitted to the California Coastal Commission for certification. The Coastal Act provides that when an LCP amendment is submitted to the Coastal Commission staff, they then have to determine whether the materials are sufficient to do a thorough and complete review. Once that requirement is satisfied and an amendment is deemed submitted, they then have 90 days on which to act on that amendment. Although there many times within that 90-day period, what they do is they get the applicant to extend the period of time, so it's not as quick as you think, even if you do submit and it's deemed complete. In January 2006, Coastal Commission staff determined that the city's general plan LCP update required further documentation and therefore it was not deemed complete at that time. In April of 2007, the city responded and provided some of the additional documentation requested by Coastal Commission staff, but not all of it. After that April 2007 correspondence, a dispute arose between the California Coastal Commission staff and city staff on whether the general plan, local coastal plan, was deemed complete and filed pursuant to the Coastal Act. However, in 2007, 2008, and 2009, city staff was assured that the Coastal Commission staff was working on the review of the city's GP LCP update, even if it had not been deemed complete and filed. June of this year, the city staff, myself, the city manager, and the public service director met with the coastal staff in regard to this issue and some other issues. But with this issue, their basic position was that because it had been sitting for over the 5 years period now, it was stale, and that we needed to go through a public hearing process again. We discussed the different options that are available to the city, and we bring those options to you. The first option would be to simply continue to use our 1984 general plan, local coastal plan, and do no further work on our update. Sooner or later, Coastal Commission, though, under their Coastal Act, you're required to do periodic reviews, and sooner or later they would demand that we do a periodic review. I believe they're doing Santa Cruz right now in an update. The second item is to revert back to the draft prepared by Crawford, Matari, and Clark and begin the legal process and public review. Once the review is completed, then we would again submit to the Coastal Commission and work through the issues more cooperatively regarding the documents and the review that they need to deem it complete. And the third one is more of a revert to the second draft, which is the document that you did approve as City Council, and bring that back through the process, the legal process, and have that approved and then sent back up. In my mind, I guess, and there were some comments in public comment, my recommendation is more in between the two. I really think that you need to do more than just take the document that's sitting up there, send it back through, do another negative declaration, and no public hearings. That's kind of the way I saw the third one doing it, a very simple process. Certainly would take very little staff time, but I really think the document needs more of a review than just that. And I didn't mean going all the way back to Crawford Matari, but I think you need to look at that document. You need to look at the changes that were made and what changes were made specifically to this document, and whether any more need to be made before you send it back up. Tricks is accurate enough, you know, it needs a new set of eyes to look at, but really looking at that first document that was done, which I was intimately involved with. At that time, Greg Fuse and I and Crawford Matari are the ones that went through that, and compare that document, which was just the meshing of those two documents, and seeing from there where the changes that occurred through the 25 public hearings. And so there was many public hearings where many, many good decisions probably were made, but we need to make certain that those are consistent with the Coastal Act and that they're still applicable to our situation. So I think it's a mesh of two and three. Three to me is more of a just taking that document right back to you guys and recertifying without any changes and sending it back up there again to get the clock running again. And now we know what other documents they need for their complete review. Some of the documents that they needed that were not presented to them was, for example, our subdivision ordinance, our water management plan, things that they want to look at, even though they're not within their jurisdiction. And I think the staff today feels that if they want to look at it, those documents are public records anyways. Why wouldn't we give it to them to start their review process so they have to deem it complete?
I have no other comments or questions. Question. But comments.
Yeah, questions. Do we have any idea how long they're taking on review of this kind of document now? Because a lot of the problem that we heard was just they didn't have a staff to do it, and that they were taking projects rather than major documents. Is that still the case?
It's still the case. It certainly is still the case. I don't know how long it would be. I'd like to see if get it deemed complete is my concern is that whatever document we take, whatever direction you give us, whether that's just to take the current one that is sitting there and send it right back through just with one public hearing and the environmental document and send it back up there, that we get that document deemed complete so that the clock starts running on them.
Well, I guess my other question is, we've heard about doing it piecemeal, and is that possibly a better way to do it, both as far as staff time, if they can focus on a certain section of it that's the most problematic to us, and will the Coastal Commission approve things in a piecemeal manner? And I'm looking at trying to get something done, because it seems to me we can spend another year going through comparing this to the two documents and whatever changes we need to make now, because it's been so long and we have other issues that have come up that we know are important, and then still have the whole thing sit there in a lump for another couple of years. Would it be more, do you think, after your meeting with them, do you think it would be more efficient to do it piecemeal?
I think as issues come up, like we're doing now with the wireless communication and with the 2,500 square feet, and I thought there was even one more.
The sign code, but all those are our zoning code.
Those are zoning as opposed to LCP.
Yeah, the LCP, I think they want to see all at one time. The zoning code, we can make amendments to and bring those up, batch those up.
So they want an entire document.
Madam Mayor, I would suggest that part of the reason isn't just that staffing, but that what we sent them was so completely different from what what we're currently using, is that there was no way to compare. And I think that's probably the benefit of the number two, is what Moltari was supposed to have done, and which he probably did, was to mesh the two documents without making policy changes. And that would be a good place to start from. And then that can get the clock ticking again. But like Mr. Schultz said, if we started with that document, which was the true meshing, I would see a subcommittee of maybe a council member or two and a planning commissioner to work with staff and just go through that real quickly, so it doesn't have to burden the whole bodies of either of those, and see if we can just work through that and see, oh, yeah, and compare it to that newer document and say, oh, here's where we made a major change because. And then we can fit it into the form so they can then easily compare, so they won't get lose time.
Was that one of the concerns, that it was too big a change? Or did they say that?
I'm not sure they used too big a change. They have more concerns that Coastal Act policies were eliminated.
Okay. Questions on this end of the table? No? Okay.
Well, I guess there's not really an answer to it. My questions are really about an estimate on for this hybrid concept and opening this back up and digging into it, like some sort of estimate on time frame and potential cost. You know, Ms. Winholz just suggested one way to do it. The other is to focus it through the Planning Commission, I would guess. So
send it back. Just
I wouldn't.
Okay, we've already established that. So then we have
number three doesn't send it back just boom either. It's bringing it back and having public review again and stuff. So I just think maybe at a different level where it's not as extensive,
right,
to try and put it back up there.
Well, okay, what we have is the Crawford-Moltari version, which combined the documents, and then we have the one that was worked over and worked over and worked over, and finally approved and sent off. So it seems to me, as Rob was saying, if we go halfway in between, we've got the one progression, we can look at that and then compare it to the one that we have now and see where there's any differences. And also, we need the input of staff on what new has come up, because I'm sure a lot of things have. This is so old now. Things that we might not have thought of when we did the first review. So is that kind of where we're all going? Somewhere between two and three and adding a little four?
That's where I'm at, especially if you include the Planning Commission along with staff in that evaluation. I think that would really be valuable and make it much more worth the effort.
Okay.
I would just suggest the subcommittee as a way to become more efficient. Mm-hmm. And because whatever they do will have to become back to the bodies anyways. And I think that would be quicker to do that.
How would that work staff-wise? Is that, do you feel that that would be a good way to do it? Or is that going to be spinning wheels?
Well, I don't think it'll be spinning wheels, but we basically have a, you know, one person planning department currently with a temporary employee there. So the workload is, you know, we look at the downtown visioning when we have time. You know, maybe this rises to above that because we have to have a general plan before we can have a specific plan. So, you know, just knowing that we have a, you know, limited staffing levels, we could use basically, you know, the help of the Planning Commission, you know, as much as we can. And perhaps, you know, maybe there's other avenues to pursue for some outside help that aren't as costly as others. We got a lot of help from the students at Cal Poly for a downtown visioning. I think there's been some interest from a professor to at least help us with the public workshop side of the general plan. So we may want to take a look at that and see if we can get some additional help for a relatively low cost or no cost.
So are there ways that you could break up the project so that a subcommittee would be able to focus on this and bring something back, and perhaps Cal Poly could do this section of it? I mean, is that doable?
Yeah, we could break it up into bite-sized pieces. We don't have to tackle the entire document all in one work session and, you know, the marathon land use planning workshop and come out after an all-nighter or something.
Well, I'm thinking about how the visioning was done for downtown. It was two council members and two planners? It was one council member and PWAB and
one council
member and two planners. So something like that to initiate and then, you know, talk with staff about what they're doing or have staff give them. I think it's just to getting a hold of that matrix and seeing what that looks like and how helpful that is and where.
Yeah.
Madam Mayor, certainly change your decision, but we will. We're looking at the possibility of bringing back to you in a future meeting. As Mr. Levick said, we currently have our planning manager, and we're having a temporary employee because we had the resignation of a planner a couple of months ago. It's abundantly clear after our last decision, your last decision with the collection worker, that we need to bring you clear information about when we replace and don't replace positions, what that means. So I don't want it to be a surprise when we will be bringing back to you, probably at our next meeting, a request to fill that planning position. And I think it's something you want to maybe not consider tonight in your decision, but it's something that certainly will affect what we do with this general plan, because I think it's – Mr. Livick was really gentle about this. But I think it's going to be very difficult for us to proceed with any sort of extra work on a general plan without an additional planning, without a replacement planning position. I didn't want it to come as a surprise next week when you see this on the agenda.
But maybe the cheap way to go would be just to send back the Moultrie version and let that go, and then we can work on pieces of it. And then it wouldn't require a subcommittee or anything else.
I would be totally opposed to that. There were too many changes that were done through public hearings that rendered that one just obsolete at this point.
Well, I want to comment on that because I watched and or...
No, especially since the council did hear it and discuss it quite a bit. So I don't want to go back to square one on it. How do the rest of you feel?
I'm still leaning towards number three based on time and money.
Absolutely.
In all honesty, that's the way I feel right now. It's if we're trying to get a document through, as you said, to what degree with the least amount of cost at this point, additional cost, I'm supportive of that.
But see, I think that's where the trouble is, that they see that as not matching the Coastal Act anymore, so it's going to come up to roadblocks. So we might as well fix it here and now before we send it back.
But that's why it's calling for reviewing and public comment in that option.
But
it's just going to be limited.
But I think it would take some work before we send it back. Whereas if you start with the Moultrie version, it's already been, what it really is just a blend of what we already have, and that's already been accepted. And though it's not updated, at least it aligns itself with the Coastal Act. And so there's not a lot that's objectionable in there. What you want is to update it, but it's not, it's acceptable document. It's already been approved.
Well, so is the one that was sent to the Coastal Commission.
But it hasn't been approved by the Coastal. But it hasn't been approved by the Coastal Commission. Our current document was approved by the Coastal Commission.
Right, the Gough and Metairie wasn't.
The only thing that should be in the Metairie document is the old general plan and the old LCP. And by the term old, I mean the one that we're currently operating.
Right.
And all he was supposed to have done was blend them. So there should be nothing new in there. It should be actually what we already have in one book instead of in two books.
But the other thing, you can blend two old things. They're still old. And that was the problem. We went through and we looked at the things that we needed to do to make them new and make them applicable to now.
But we also
and
did
the size, the whole mansionization discussion and everything was part of that.
But there's also tremendous new things that are in there that have nothing to do with what was in the old document that were new policy changes. And that those are the things that may or may not match up with the Coastal Act because it hasn't had that review by Coastal staff.
Okay. Well, I'm liking your idea of a subcommittee. I think that probably is a good idea to go through the two documents and then get some input from Planning Commission, perhaps staff through the Planning Commission, as to what current things we'd like to add to that. Does that sound like a reasonable plan? Go ahead. Say something.
If I had to take my pick, I'd agree with Ms. Borchert and go with number three.
Well, I'm feeling very strongly that we do have some very significant changes since this was submitted to the Coastal Commission, and I think it would be important for us to maximize this effort and not rush through it, but really take it and develop it so that it's ultimately something that we can count and depend on into the long term, or as far into the future as we could realistically expect it to be effective. So I would hope that we would take some time. We would respect the process that went into the Metairie reports and acknowledge that, but also take a strong look at what exactly from the Coastal Commission are the things that are not matching up to their Coastal Act requirements. And I think the subcommittee idea is a good place to do that work and start to thresh all those details out. You know, we're saying that there's new things to add and to consider. We need a list of those and really to start to that discussion. I don't see this happening overnight. This is going to be a long-term process. But if we do it right, it should be worthwhile and really return a value to the community. Obviously, there's just been so many changes in the last 5 years that we're going to need to do this anyway. So let's just make the most of it and not feel like we're in a foot race to get it done and make sure that we include some public input as we go forward.
Okay. One of the things that you mentioned brings up another question. Did we get any input from the Coastal Commission as to how we weren't doing it right? I mean, it seems to me they didn't even review it. Did they?
They didn't review it in detail. I was just looking at, to give you an example of, they did provide us with one letter during that whole time on that was significant to it, and that was in 2006. And, for example, one of the things they state is that the GPLUP document often references Coastal Act policies as a substitute for more specific policy language. For example, implementation standard CSC 2C states in part, development permits within wetland or other buffer areas are limited to the uses listed in Section 30233 of the Coastal Act. Staff recommends these type of Coastal Act references be removed from the text of the policies and replaced with specific language. So that was the kind of things that were made to
launch this and be involved with the reflection of what happened in the past. Because that's something that I'm not in tune
right,
with at all.
If we get two new planning commissioners.
Well, we could, and that we could begin it. Yeah. I guess we could begin it
right.
And pass it off.
And then
right.
Just transition, we could transition in, but I would feel that would be more beneficial
mm-hmm.
in
okay.
the beginning.
And I certainly think with that in mind, before the election, we'd at least have established what our work plan is.
Right. Okay.
I mean, cause to be honest, I have not, and I don't believe anyone in planning has really looked at that new document. We're going to have to pick it back up and look at it, and look at it with a critical eye again, along with the changes. So I think if it is the mayor and council member Wenholtz, at least within the next 2 or 3 months, we could at least know exactly whether we're 6 months away from getting this done or we're a long ways away.
And one comment I would have, too, in regards to the downtown visioning, it was really clear as we went through that process that there were going to be things that we were going to need to do through an amendment or another action with the plan. So really, I don't see a problem with having that project take a back seat to this. It seems like this is for the best of the whole, and then we can hopefully fold some of these needs into the project.
All right, so Betty and I are volunteering to be on the subcommittee, and so then we just have to get a couple of planning commissioners also. And perhaps, you know, if we're assuming that Nancy's going to get through, oh, there she is.
It might be good to get the, and I'm thinking of who has a background on the commission that would already be involved in this area. Like Mr. Lucas is obviously an architect, so he may be more familiar with general plans.
I think it would be best to allow them to make that choice rather than us choose for them. Okay, their time. Based
but
on
there
their
we
time.
Also isn't there is Mr. Lure an engineer or something that he might be familiar with the document as well?
Right. Yeah,
is what I'm thinking.
Well, let's have them come up with a couple of people and. And then we'll get together.
And the other option, and I'm this just speaking of professions, maybe there's a couple of people in the public that are retired city planners. I have no idea that may be of help or not.
I think that the first thing really is to review it, though, from where it was. And if you bring forward the information, then we can figure out from there.
I think from that standpoint, that's what at least I would like to see happen is that the subcommittee really just come back with a report in a month or 2 months, however soon we can tackle it, with a game plan. Because none of us here can sit here tonight and definitively say, but you did eliminate number one of the option and the number three. There's someone in between, but what that in between is, we're just not sure of yet.
You know, it might be just as efficient if just the two of us do it at first.
To figure out what to do
with staff.
That might be a good idea. Just meet with staff and figure that out.
That would be good.
Get the documents.
Right.
Look at them.
Yeah. Are the documents easily accessible? Okay. I probably have them at home. In one of those notebooks on my shelf. Okay. All right. So we don't need a motion on that. We're just going to take that action. All right. Item D3. Request to approve a response to the grand jury regarding use of city vehicles.
This may look familiar. The grand jury was busy this last year. Most cities got 4 requests from the grand jury. The city of Morrobey only got 3. This is the second of those 3 requests. You'll be seeing the next one at your next meeting. This one was particularly in response to use of city vehicles. On June 9th, we received a report prepared by the San Luis Obispo County Grand Jury entitled Use of City Vehicles, and the report made a number of findings and a number of recommendations. The city of Morrobey was required to respond to 4 of the findings and 3 of the recommendations. And I will note that in the original report, the grand jury report focused its attention on the number of city-owned vehicles in each jurisdiction. And as noted, in Morrobey's number, they reported that we took 11% of our vehicles home for a total of 6. And actually, in our letter, we're discussing that with the grand jury because 2 of the vehicles that we listed in the Public Services Department were duty vehicles, not take-home vehicles. So that really takes our take-home vehicle stock down to 4, which makes us 7%. And I might add that that's the lowest in the county of San Luis Obispo for take-home vehicles. And we're certainly not the smallest city, so I think that's something that we can be proud of. Just real briefly, I'll go over the findings and the recommendations. And this is in the letter that we've dated we will redate. That's currently dated July 7th. But grand jury finding number 1 that was that all cities except Morrobey have established some rules for employee use of city-owned vehicles. And we neither need to agree with the finding or disagree with the finding or partially disagree or agree. And we partially agree with this finding. You will note that in the contracts of employment for AND, we, again, will be preparing a policy, and we will also be discussing their concerns with CJPIA, which deals with some of our risk exposure. Those were the findings. The recommendations that they made were to amend our written policy or prepare a written policy, and we certainly agree with that recommendation. Recommendation number two is to enroll our employees in the poll notice, and we have already done that for quite some time now. And recommendation number three was to look at the risk issues. So I feel that we've addressed their concerns, and we're asking that you approve this letter for the mayor's signature to send to the grand jury, and I think our deadline is at the beginning of next week.
Okay. Any questions? Comments.
I have a question in regards to the comprehensive written policy. Do we have an estimate about approximately when we might be seeing that back?
It's on the bubble. It's not on the top of the bubble. It's something that we certainly need to do in probably 4 to 6 months. I'm not completely concerned because our city employees certainly we have past practice that we've used with take-home vehicles, so I'm not concerned about abuse at this point, but I do agree that we do need a written policy.
Comment? No? Betty?
Yes, it's pretty much an editorial thing. On the second page of the report, you'll notice right above the discussion section says the report specifically requires the Morro Bay City Council to submit a response. And in the grand jury finding number five, the city response actually says the city council, blah, blah. And so I would just like to make a consistency thing here that in each of our city responses that we say the city council partially agrees, the city council agrees, that we could just add the word city, the word council to all 1, 2, 3, 5, 7 of those items. And then the only other word change I would suggest is on that number five, actually, on the top of the fourth page, grand jury finding number five, because this is the only one that doesn't say agrees or partially agrees. So could we say the city council agrees with the grand jury's concern? Because I think you were agreeing with that, and then as referenced, I just think we need to throw that word in there.
That all makes sense, right? Anybody have any problems with that? Okay. All right. Other comments, anyone? No. Okay.
I would move approval of the letter with changes as noted.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, future agenda items. Who's got what? Coda? Noah?
I do. It's in relation to the, and it's a tentative agenda item depending on information that I'm hoping to gather, but it's in relation to Cold Canyon Landfill and the EIR process that's underway right now, and the potential for the composting operation to be abandoned there and transferred to Santa Maria out of county. At this point, from the news reports and some preliminary discussions I've had with different staff of various agencies that are involved, it appears that the interests of Morro Bay are deeply entwined with this decision, and not only would we be looking at increased environmental impacts because of the trucking, but also our rates very significantly are forecast to practically double per ton transported to Santa Maria. And also at that point we would become dependent on whatever Santa Maria was inclined to charge us going into the future. So my plan is to get some more information working with Ms. Borchard and potentially draft a letter or comment on behalf of the city to the appropriate bodies in regards to that decision. At this point I'm not sure if we have that opportunity, but I'd like to put it on the calendar. If we have the opportunity.
That was the longest future agenda item I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
It's got me worked up, I guess.
Okay,
it would be a discussion on the Cold Canyon composting and EIR process and in regards to a comment letter on behalf of the city.
All right. And do we have support for that? Me too. Okay. All right. So we all agreed with that. So we'll put it on tracking until he brings back some more information.
Thank you.
And is that a letter you're going to be providing, Mr. Smuckler?
Yes, as we get information.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, is IWMA not going to weigh in on that?
We didn't meet this summer. It was canceled. So, and it is an ongoing discussion at IWMA, and Mr. Smuckler and I have been talking. So, good.
The other item is in relation to some correspondence we received about a month ago, I believe, in regards to deliveries on the Embarcadero.
And maybe they have suggestions.
Mayor and Council, would you consider vetting that at a Harbor Advisory Board meeting as
That's
a public
a
hearing
great
first?
Idea. That's a lovely idea.
Two thumbs up.
All right. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. Rick, anything? Betty?
Then I have one that was actually Mr. Smuckler brought it, but I think probably needs to go to Planning Commission before us, and that was the concern about the San Jacinto intersection. I would think that would belong there first than coming here.
What concern?
That was came out of our Public Works Advisory Board meeting, and the suggestion was that as a council we would need to revisit the work plan, work list for infrastructure projects before, you know, to really decide what is our priorities. I'm not sure what the schedule is for that. I know it's on the list somewhere.
The San Jacinto was removed from the from the work plan.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the work plan.
The comprehensive pavement management plan.
What I understood was that we were going to be getting an infrastructure list.
Oh, and yes, our capital projects.
Oh, about payment.
Yeah, the capital projects
list.
Thank
yes.
you.
Yes, that'll be coming sometime before the end of the year.
Okay.
So we'll bring
then
it.
At that point,
bring
we can evaluate whether we wanted to try to jam that in there or not.
Yes. Just want to point out most of the recommendations that were presented at the PWAB are within Caltrans's right of way, so we'd have to work very closely with Caltrans on that.
Which is always so much fun. Okay.
But I actually have a real one then for us.
Yeah, I think
it
so.
It sounds like it's nothing.
Yeah.
So it was a nothing. I do want to do a presentation or schedule a presentation time by turn the consumer advocate group to talk about these smart meters. We all got emails about that. And, and I would like to reserve some time for them at their discretion. They are willing. I did contact them. They're willing to come down from San Francisco and give us some information about that.
And is this through PG&E or independent of PG&E?
It's independent of PG&E.
Okay.
And so are we going to afford equal time for
whatever you choose?
Well, just to keep it balanced.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. PG&E is
That's
apparently talking about revising their meters. So,
in 2011, did you not get that email?
I did get that email. Councilmember Winholtz, will you be contacting them?
I am.
So you'll keep us posted on that.
Yeah. So what I'd like is to reserve the time and at their discretion, whichever Monday works for them before the end of the year, that they could come down.
Okay.
I would assume a 15-minute presentation.
Will you also be getting hold of PG&E then at the same time?
It depends on whether the council directs me to or not.
Well, I think we probably should see both sides of it.
I don't know if you want to do them at the same time, though. I would think you'd want to do one week, one the other. I don't know. It's up to
you. Unless they went to PWEB first.
Well, I don't think. No, I'd like them to come to council so it's got greater exposure.
Well, I don't. If you have it, I don't know. I'm thinking it'd be better to have it all at the same time because then you have your discussion. After both of them and any action that we might want to have can be decided at that time. Otherwise, you've
well,
got,
I, yeah, I wasn't looking for action. I thought it was just informative, like educational.
Right, but we would have the possibility of, if we don't like this.
Sure, sure.
Saying, you know, we want to go on record as we're not in favor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'd have any weight, but
I think
well, how do the rest of you feel? I'd rather have the two of them together and have the whole subject dealt with. Together.
I think having them together is
okay.
Good.
All right, so we have support for having them together.
Okay.
Betty's going to be in contact, and you'll contact PG&E.
Sure.
Okay.
And then I would really like, now that the tree information with the definition of a landmark tree and the tree list has gone between PWAB and Planning Commission, we can have that next week, next meeting here. Are you ready? Can we do that? At the at the council level?
I'm looking over at Mr. Leibick. I'm not sure about his workload.
Not sure about the next meeting, but for sure the meeting after that, we could have both of those items to you as a draft ordinance, and then first and second reading to follow.
Because there may be changes.
Yes.
I'm thinking I might be having input.
So just for clarification, landmark tree and what was the second?
The revisions to the master tree list.
Thank you. So second meeting in September.
Right. Okay. All right. Now, before we go to the closing quote, I just want to remind everyone again, I know I'm really harping on this, the no-phone zone, directly after this meeting, whether you're watching it live or whether you're watching it later in the week in reruns, right after the council meeting is going to be the PWAB meeting. Half an hour into that PWAB meeting is the presentation on the no-phone zone. Please, please, please try and watch it. Okay, Betty, closing quote.
While two are disagreeing, a third will grab the hat.
Would what?
While two are disagreeing, a third will grab the hat.
Gotcha. Okay. With that, we're adjourned. Okay.